Welcome to the Mattaquan School District Board of Education Combined Committee of the Whole and Regular Public Board Meeting for November 15th, 2016. Call to order, opening statement pursuant to NJSA 10-4-10. Notice that this meeting has been provided by publication Asbury Park Press, the Co-Star, and posted in the Borough Hall of Mattaquan and the schools within the time limits prescribed by law. Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please, Sandy.
Mrs. Bissell?
Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Here.
Mr. Tanny?
Here.
Mrs. De Palma?
Here.
Mr. Fiore?
Here.
Mr. Gardner? Mrs. Garrett Muley?
Here.
Mr. Lafredo?
Here.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Here.
Mr. Serino?
Here.
Mr. Vitale?
Here.
Mr. Warren?
Here.
Madison Detlinger? Carly Grogan? Christopher Driscoll?
Here.
Maura Farragher?
Here.
We have quorum.
Thank you. Our mission statement, Mattaquan School District empowers all students by providing a safe, healthy, and inclusive environment where continual growth, perseverance, and rigorous academic standards are balanced with extensive extracurricular opportunities and a rich tradition through a partnership with our community. Our statement to the public, oftentimes it may appear to members of our audience, the Board of Education takes action with very little comment, and in many cases by unanimous vote. Before a matter is placed on the agenda at a public meeting, the administration has thoroughly reviewed the matter with the superintendent of schools. If the superintendent of schools is satisfied the matter is ready to be placed on the, be presented to the Board of Education, it is then placed on the agenda at the next committee of the whole meeting. The members of the board work with the administration and the superintendent of schools to assure that they fully understand the matter. After the committee of the whole approves the matter, it is placed on the agenda for action at a public meeting. In rare instances, matters are presented to the Board of Education for discussion at the same meeting that final action may be taken. Acceptance of minutes. Recommend acceptance and approval of the minutes of the combined committee of the whole and regular public meeting and closed executive session of October 18th, 2016. Executive session minutes will be withheld from disclosure until such a time as the reasons for discussing and acting on a matter in closed executive session no longer exists. Do we have a motion to accept the minutes? Yep. Ms. Bissell, second. Mr. Serino, any questions or discussion? Sandy.
Mrs. Bissell.
Yes.
Mr. Burns.
Yes.
Mr. Catani.
Yes.
Mrs. De Palma.
Yes.
Mr. Fiore.
Yes.
Mrs. Garrett Muley.
Yes.
Mr. Lafredo.
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Serino.
Yes.
Mr. Vitale.
Abstain.
Mr. Warren.
Yes.
Carried.
That takes us to our student board representative report. Ms. Farragher or Mr. Driscoll?
Yes. The junior and senior student council representatives have continued working at the snack stand at every home football game. On Halloween, student council hosted a costume competition for the students at the beginning of the day. This year, student council decided to completely redesign our open house for the 8th graders. Instead of putting each of the 8th graders and parents on tours around the school, we decided to open up some of the classrooms with MHS students and teachers in them. Each classroom represented every one of the academic departments and academies, so the 8th graders and the parents were able to see what the everyday environment looks like at MHS. If they went to enough classrooms, they were able to go down to the cafeteria for a free Walter's cookie. This turned out to be a great success. Student council, other students, and teachers did a great job showing the future students of MHS what they have to look forward to.
Also, homecoming preparation is in full swing. Every year, right before Thanksgiving break, each grade picks a class theme and decorates a hallway in the school. Student council hosts Spirit Week leading up to it and a pep rally the day before our vacation. The homecoming dance for all grades is this Friday, and we will be hosting a powder puff game this Sunday, which is between the junior and senior girls. We are looking forward to these amazing events.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That brings us to our presentations. I will turn it over to Dr. Cajun for that.
I will go to the podium for that, but before I do, I just want to thank you very much for being here, and I really appreciate everything you guys do, and just telling us everything that you've been actively engaged in makes us so successful. So thank you.
Thank you, brothers.
Okay.
We'll start off our recognition this evening by focusing on our Students of the Month. But before we do that, I just want to reminisce for a minute. The last time I had a board meeting that was standing room only,
was in another district when I had canceled Halloween. And that was a very energetic meeting. And tonight, I see everybody here for a positive reason, and I appreciate that. It's a great night when you can compliment, and you both look at each other saying, how could he cancel Halloween? I had good reasons for it, but we reinstated it because there were about 300 people that really wanted to have candy. So having said that, thank you very much for being here this evening. And it's great for Board of Education to be able to reach out and start every meeting focusing on student accomplishments. And I compliment this board for doing that and understanding how important students are, and really that's the reason why we're here. We'd like to start every meeting off focusing on how we select our Students of the Month. The Students of the Month serve as role models for their peers. They're academically motivated, and they've demonstrated leadership in and out of the classroom and have a very positive school attitude. They're involved in extracurricular activities, and they perform school and community service activities as well. The Elk Students Teenager of the Month will also be celebrated this evening, and they're selected by teachers who focus on recognition of outstanding accomplishments in school and community, focusing on life, fine arts, hobbies, athletics, church, school, club, community service, industry, and farming. Their accomplishments should be recognized and praised, and we do that. The Manasquan Board of Education congratulates the Manasquan High School Students of the Month for grade 12, Abigail McHugh. Abigail, are you going to see? We'll make sure she gets her Wally's books and her certificate. The Manasquan High School Student of the Month for grade 11, Brian Rogers. Brian? Hi, Brian. Thank you for being here. There'll be no questions posed to you this evening. The Manasquan Board of Education congratulates the Students of the Month for grade 10 and grade 9. From grade 10, James Conti. James? Matthew Driscoll. Your brother did a great job tonight, right? Yes, he did. The Manasquan Board of Education would like to congratulate our High School Teacher of the Month, Paul Battaglia. Not be with us this evening because I believe we have the National Honor Society inductions going on as we speak. I see all the heads nodding, so I was correct. Awesome. The Manasquan Board of Education congratulates the Manasquan Elementary School Student of the Month, Jillian Spall. Jillian, could you pause for one moment, please, and look that way? Awesome. At the camera. The lady that's waving. There you go. And would you like to say anything?
It was a pretty hard-rocking period, but with a lot of effort, I made it through, and I'm very thankful for that.
Manasquan Board of Education would like to congratulate our Elementary School Teacher of the Month, Kimberly Roy. The Manasquan Board of Education would like to congratulate of Manasquan Elementary School, ELK Student of the Month, Shelby Lopez. Congratulations. The Manasquan Board of Education wants to congratulate our Manasquan High School ELK Teenager of the Month, Jenna Stanley. The Manasquan Board of Education would like to congratulate our September Manasquan High School ELK Teenager of the Month, Abigail McHugh. Abigail? Now we'd like to congratulate the Manasquan Elementary School Boys and Girls Cross Country team as division champions. And as you can see tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have a cake. So as soon as we're finished with all of the names this evening and you get your certificates, we're going to pause, we'll cut the cake, and we'll ask you to please participate in some. And we will not start the meeting again until all the cake is gone. That's on you. First, I'd like to congratulate our coaches, Coach Matthew Shad, our boys coach. Coach? And if you wouldn't mind saying a few words about your team, I'd really appreciate it.
Here we go.
Thank you. I'm going to call him up, but if you could just sort of generally say some things about your team.
Sure, I'd love to. Good evening, everyone. First of all, I want to thank Dr. Cajun. I want to thank the Board of Education, everybody for coming, all the community members for coming out tonight. Thank you very much. It means a lot for these students. Second, I want to thank Mr. Kirk. I want to publicly thank Mr. DeMuro and Mr. Russinello. I have 42 runners, and 4 managers, and supervision gets tight sometimes, so those people have helped me out a lot. A special thanks goes out to Mrs. DiMattia. I could not run with 42 students without Mrs. DiMattia. She's there constantly to help with all parts of logistics and with supervision of all the students. Next, I would like to thank all the siblings, the grandparents, and parents for all your support when you come out to all the meets. It means a lot to the students. It means a lot to our program. Next is, I'd also like to give a special thanks for the McManus family. They opened their home to 70 student athletes for a pasta party this week, this season. So thank you very much for that. I want to thank our team members for all their hard work, which earned them an undefeated season, first in their division, and they were second overall at the championship meet with about 25 teams from Ocean and Monmouth County. We're about one of the smaller schools to do that, to play second overall, so I'm very proud of their efforts. They worked very hard. Some of our proud moments when you're a cross-country coach, when you have to get down on your hands and knees at the finish line because one of your girls ran so hard that they're literally foaming at the mouth. And you have to check if they still have a pulse and if they're breathing. Another one, I'm going to congratulate one of the boys. I'm putting up a high five and he crosses the line and he vomits in my direction. I gotta thank, that's how hard these students are working. They did a great job this season and I'm very proud to be their coach. Congratulations, guys, it was good for you.
And for the girl, Coach Gina DiMattia, coach.
I think Mr. Shad pretty much thanked everyone. So thank you guys again, and congratulations, boys, girls. Girls had an 8-0 season, and it was the first time any of the runners won the division. It was my first time as well, so I was super excited about that. So again, thank you to everyone, and enjoy. Thank you.
Manasquan Elementary School Girls Cross Country Team Division Champions. When we call your name, could you please come forward and receive your Wally Bucks as well as your certificate? Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. Mary Rose O'Connell, grade 7. Logan Ridge. Eleanor Kuster. Delia Klein. William Bryant. Carly Coble. Chase Heron. This is Carly.
Congratulations.
Thanks for coming right from practice, ladies. Giselle Sarmonetto. No? All right. Olivia Cupo. Ella Cafaro. Jessica Hagerman. Bianca D'Antone. Jordan Dole. Maya Rosado. Lulu Nelson. Sally Becker. Faith Franklin. And this next person was undefeated 8-0 in division meets. Congratulations, Jillian Spall. Megan Lisk. Elsie Johnson. Megan Priest. And Catherine Hallman. Madeline Dingler. Dana Sharir. And Kaylee Smith, our manager. Kaylee Smith. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kaylee. The boys have been division champions for 5 consecutive years. Congratulations, fellas. Christopher Runge. Miles Nebo. Jack Quinn. Quinn Feeney. Graham Weber. Is Graham here?
No? Graham.
Dale Driscoll. Peter Yastinchak. Shane Devine. That was a tough slide. Julie and George. Kieran McMenamin. Nilan DeLuccio. Nilan, thank you very much for being here. Michael Carafero. Jay Keating. Luis Morales. Michael Presby. Ryan Detlinger. David Lisk. Kieran Pasterlak. Thank you, Kieran. Kellen Drobaugh. Elias Seppi. Matthew Rose. Andrew Brennan. Darren Van Pelt. Ryan Reagan. Rich, seventh grade, had a lot of homework today? I'm ready then. Ooh. Matthew Detlinger. Joseph Franklin. Michael Antonucci. And Noah Lovin.
Noah was here.
Noah is here.
Noah Lovin.
Noah, thank you very much. Is Bryce here this evening?
Yes.
Bryce was also undefeated 8-0 in division meets. Bryce Ridge. Bryce, congratulations.
Pleasure.
Great job.
That was a great job. Gavin Tootie. Intervini. Mark Rutto. Matthew Testa. William McManus. Hi, Ryan. And William. Congratulations, guys. Rory Giblin. Andrew Scranton. William Burns. Daniel Liggett. Jonathan Vogel. Daniel Hippie. And Joseph Brennan. Ryan Esdale, 7th grade. We are going to get you a certificate. Here is your Wally Bow. So congratulations and thank you. Now we're going to take a short recess and have cake. Could you cut the cake, please? Jersey's Grant, our director of technology and everything human, and that is a resource, as well as our technology integration coach, Jesse Place, and Lisa Kokoda.
Wow.
Not quite cake worthy.
It's hard to follow cake.
Yes, always. We're pleased to be back before the board again to talk about the Future Ready program in which the district engaged last spring. I wanted to kind of review some of the things that we were able to accomplish with that to kind of build off of what we talked about last year. And then also tonight show a short video that we produced for the grant program, which I think is really informative about what our district is able to do in technology, or in educational technology, both inside the grant and outside the grant, you know, stuff that we do every day. And also, a big piece of this was digital learning surveys that were a part of a requirement of the grant, but something that we wanted to do anyway. And Mrs. Kokoda is going to speak to that, about some of those results, which I thought were interesting to be able to share with the board. So to just kind of remind everybody, this was a state-funded competitive grant program in which we for which we applied last spring. The grant period ran from March through August, which, you know, as grants go, is a pretty tight schedule. And the state was pretty upfront about being a pretty tight schedule for getting a lot accomplished. This was a mentor-mentee relationship program. You had to engage with another school district, and we chose to engage with the Riverdale Regional School District, the Bergen County District, as our mentor, because they are a district that has had a very successful and state modeled, actually nationally modeled, one-to-one program for over 11 or 12 years at this point. So we partnered with them to kind of work on this grant together. And the total award amount, you know, that Manus One received from this program was almost $215,000. And that was quite an accomplishment for our old budget. So in terms of what the goals and what the outcomes were, we had a number of goals, but these kind of focused on the main ways in which we used those funds and we focused on the program. Obviously, the biggest ticket item was we were able to expand our one-to-one program to provide devices to the sixth and seventh grade. That's something that we had always wanted to do since we began the one-to-one program. This obviously allowed us to do it because otherwise, quite frankly, it was not something we could really fit into our operating budget in any one budget year. So that was a huge accomplishment, and those students got those devices rolled out in the beginning of September of this school year. We were able to increase our wireless capacity in the elementary school. Our district has been pretty much had wireless coverage long before I was here. At the time, that was kind of built around a coverage model, meaning like if you had a device in any part of the building, you could connect to wireless. It was never really built at that time or intended for a capacity model. When you have 30 students in every classroom sitting there with a device that's going to connect to wireless, you have to have a capacity model for that, right? And basically, essentially have an access point in every room and more in common areas. The high school had already been pretty good with that because we already had the full one-to-one, but we used some funds from this grant to be able to expand that in the elementary school. And now we're very comfortable to say that's pretty much expanded there to a full capacity model. And the other, and perhaps the most important piece, was really providing professional development to teachers. We ran professional development sessions during the day for teachers in the spring of last year. Pretty much in that model, Lisa worked with teachers, small groups of teachers from various departments to kind of look what their needs were. We provided some ideas for teachers. They came up with their own ideas about what they wanted to learn more about, and we did that. And we also ran 9 summer PD sessions where teachers came in over the summer. And we had 122 attendees. That's not unique teachers, but that's the total number of 122 people attending all of those sessions combined. And again, I would just emphasize that we were able to accomplish all of this in a few months without giving any cost to the board, any cost to the taxpayers. This was completely funded by this program, which we were very lucky to have. So part of this grant was that we did need to produce a video, okay, about how we're using the technology and how digital learning is in the district. Fortunately for us tonight, there was a time limit on that video. But, you know, quite honestly, quite seriously, we really had to go back and cut from a lot of the footage because we really did see so many good things going on. And I'll credit Lisa with this also because she was really the one who went around using our own devices, the same devices students use, to produce this video and get that. So I'd just like to show that at this point because I think it does show some of the pretty exciting things that are going on here in the district.
Anytime you introduce a new technology, something they're excited about, it really pulls them in and gets them working harder and interacting more.
Three props, and the radius is 1.5. Okay.
Doing anything different, I think, is exciting for the kids. So using a wireless projection, being in the back of the room, giving them a chance to use it and write with it, changes the game for them. We were able to use a drag and drop method. Some of the kids were actually able to use the tool themselves and actually try it on my computer while looking at their notes right at their desk.
As you're listening, you can be taking notes, okay, on the phone for your partner, and then you will kind of think about what you put here in order to make similarities and differences if you're on the next call.
Independent work to them and have them collaborate as well, either right in the classroom or remotely while they're in the OneNote program. Highlight and color code things for them, especially in the realm of writing. So when they're going back to revise, they are constantly putting highlighted marks over certain elements that I'm looking for.
What I really like about OneNote is how it allows me now to give students real-time feedback, changes my assessment methods, and allows me to interact with them during a lesson. So for instance, we were just doing a lesson where the students were online and they had to look up a specific activity, they had to look up some locations of some planes, do a quick calculation, and what was really neat is they were able to take a screenshot of what they were working with individually, and it's different for everyone in the class, insert that into their personal folder in our class notebook, and then I can actually look at what they were doing and see if adjustments had to be made or if they were doing the right thing.
Videos and listenings from authentic, you know, websites and news sources. In the past, I used to have to, before we had tablets and before we had OneNotes at our disposal, I used to have to put me listening up on my Active Board or PowerPoint, and we used to have to listen to it as a class. OneNote in order to go onto the links and gather information, watch the videos to get a little bit more information for the project. And then after they watched the videos and took some notes and gathered some information, they worked in pairs or groups in order to now present to me.
I pretty much run my whole class now in OneNote. Like, we do like daily problems, like it's like a do now, so I can start that. And kids, I'll just randomly pick one student's tablet, I can project it on the screen, and I can go over the problem. Homeworks, I screenshot all their textbook homework, so now they can do all their homeworks, they'll have their textbook page right there, they can do the homework right there. Whether it's using a stylus or typing, it timestamps it for me, so I go back and look at the lecture really anymore. The notes are there for the kids, they can add on to the notes, because they're free to write. Anything they want to add to the notes that I put into the class. And because of it, the class moves a lot faster and I'm able to get to activities.
I think that the tablets provide us with a lot of extra resources. If we need extra help or if we want to further what we're learning, the teachers can upload anything and we'll get it right away.
Sense where like it kept me more organized because in classes like biology you have a lot of papers, but having it on OneNote just made everything a lot more organized and like prepared me better for school.
There are also a lot more websites and different programs that we can now use in the classroom, and it's very interactive between the teacher's tablets and the student's tablets, so it's a different way of teaching and it gets the students more.
What we're waiting for is to come up and connect. We're going to be doing our interactive whiteboard lesson today, so I'm going to be asking for some help.
Since we are both full-time in the classroom, it's easier for us to bounce back and forth where the kids don't know who's the general ed teacher, who's the special ed teacher.
The tablet is something new to them. We've been really trying to incorporate more technology in because they want to be picked. They want to be chosen to hold the tablet and be. So the tablet, using the tablet, allows them to drag and drop and write on those higher spaces. And they just love seeing what they're doing on the tablet magically come up.
What I like about that is not only does it cut down on paper, but the students have access to it 24/7, online or offline. And what's really neat about this going forward is that students now want more.
And again, I think that just provides a snapshot of kind of what goes on in the district every day. And you can see, even in as low as third grade, in that program, outside of the one-to-one, outside of everything else, that kind of commitment that our teachers have made, that the board has made and the district has made, I think in a lot of ways is really paying off. That's nice to hear anecdotally, but as part of this program, we also had to participate in a couple rounds of surveys. And these are pretty extensive surveys. Some of you may have actually got them in emails from me as parents, if you filled them out. Thank you, I appreciate that. We had to have a minimum number of stakeholders in each of the groups. There were different parameters for each building. And the data that we get back from that actually ends up being about a 100-page document for each school each time we did the survey. So we're going to go through that page by page now tonight. We're going to stop that. But what Lisa's going to explain to you is kind of some of the highlights from that and what we were actually able to gain. And again, this is over a very short period of time. The first survey was conducted in March. The second survey was conducted right at the beginning of this school year. So if you really think about that, that's really only full months, April, May, and June, when students were actually here, you know, engaging in this process. So let's go.
Okay, so I'll just go over a couple of highlights of the survey results. Just to clarify, the different stakeholders who were surveyed were students, teachers, administrators, and parents and guardians. So there are a variety of different results, and you'll see different opinions throughout, but I really chose to focus on the overall of each school and then also the student perception at this point. I thought those were kind of the two most important parts. So just to clarify the Future Ready Pledge from the U.S. Department of Education, it's all about 21st century learning skills and having that vision of districts moving towards that personalized learning plan using technology. So we'll start with Manasquan Elementary School. And so this is the visual of the survey overview. So on the left-hand side is the April results. So they display it in a quadrant, and the goal is to be in that top right quadrant. And so what the survey measures the school district's digital readiness and then digital implementation. So how do people feel you are ready and are you implementing it? So you'll see along the left-hand side is the school readiness and along the bottom is the implementation. So where you want to be is ready and implementing. And so you'll see in April, although there were some pretty good results in a few of what they call gears, curriculum and instruction in blue, the technology networks and hardware in red, and data and privacy, you'll see that community partnerships and use of time were both along that borderline as an opinion of our stakeholders. As of September, when the survey was administered again, you'll see all of those gears and their scores moved into that top right quadrant, which again, in a very short period of time to see that growth, we can only assume and hope that we'll continue to grow in that. So to just point out here, in April of 2016, 20% of Manasquan Elementary School teachers disagreed that their students have 24/7 access to the school's digital learning environment. When that same survey in question was administered in September, 0% of teachers disagreed with that. So I think that can be directly related to the one-to-one program being implemented in sixth and seventh grade, and also really our implementation of our Canvas learning management system, which really allows access to students to all of their course materials as the teachers are using them. And then if we look at, this is a student survey result. In April of 2016, the question was the frequency to which students say they learn with technology. You'll see in April, 27.8% said every day or almost every day. And 1 month into this school year, almost 90% of students say they learn with technology every day. So I think that that really shows the commitment that our teachers are really making to using the technology in their classrooms.
Keep in mind, this is not just the students in the one-to-one program. So I think this survey goes as low as fourth grade. So even with those students included, we're, you know, around 90%.
Yeah, the jump in from April to September really, I think, really says a lot about the direction that the program is heading. And so if we jump to Manasquan High School, to the high school, you'll see, again, the quadrants community partnerships, and use of time. Again, we're kind of along that border, and use of time being more in the not ready but implementing. But if you look in September, again, everything making headed in the right direction and where we want to be, in that the school and the district is ready and also using the resources available and implementing everything. And so if we look at a couple of specifics for the high school, in the September student survey results, over 98% of high school students report that they use a computer in their learning in school almost every day. So again, 98% of students. 92% report that they use the computer in their learning outside of school at least a few times per week. So our teachers are not only holding them responsible in the classroom, but also when they're home to really reinforce everything. And lastly, 85% report that they access their class materials online when they are outside of school. So again, just really showing how our teachers are using the tablets, our Canvas learning management system, and all of our office products. And I thought that this was interesting in the percentages. Our stakeholders committed to the vision. You'll see here 100% of teachers report that they do see high value in digital learning and are also committed to transitioning their classroom to digital learning. I think that you know, really is a result of a lot of the professional development that was funded by the grant, because I think that they feel, in talking to our teachers, they feel confident and they feel like they're able to take risks in using technology in their classrooms. 96% of parents and guardians support the inclusion of digital learning, and our school administrators agree that transitioning the school to 21st century skills must be a top priority. So again, these were just a couple of the highlights of the results, but it's clear that the school district is making strides in implementing digital learning.
Yeah, and again, I think in such a short period of time to see changes like that is pretty significant. To make it clear, this is not a survey that we developed ourselves. This is a nationally recognized digital learning survey the Department of Education provides to us. And we plan on now doing it annually to kind of make sure that we're still on track and looking at those targets. So we appreciate the opportunity to update you on this and look forward to continuing to do so in the future. Thank you. I knew someone would have a question.
Can you go back to the 98 percentile piece? Because I can see the headlines in the Coast Star tomorrow. A lot of school districts have board meetings and they talk about the jargon associated with 21st century skills and digital learning. But this isn't just jargon. It's because the Board of Education's vision to make this a reality, we can talk about 98% of teachers and students saying that they actually use digital learning in the classroom every day. That is awesome. To have a Board of Education that only understands this, but makes this a reality by putting people like Lisa Kokoda into a position where she can professionally develop. I remember the night I brought that concept to you. No one hesitated. You understood how important it was for professional development to utilize the one-to-one devices we had and to give Jesse some help in regards to focusing on technology in the classroom. And in a matter of a short period of time, we really turned the corner. A lot of times we talk about things in Board of Education meetings and we just keep going. And you don't stop, take a breath, and focus on the major inroads that you've made to a child's educational progress every day. And you've done that. So compliments to you and compliments to my technology team. You've done a great job. And thank you for that. I can see those headlines in the Coast Star tomorrow. We have a report here. Manitowoc Board of Education has great vision for future digital learning. That's excellent. Thank you. And I thought cake was going to be the most important thing we did this evening. Something I'm very excited about this evening is focusing on It's on the agenda to be approved as we move forward to our Academy of Public Safety at Manasquan High School. And Barbara Kerensky and Tim Clayton have been working diligently to get this accomplished, and now for their presentation.
Thank you for allowing us to move forward with this. It's really exciting to be at the forefront of what will be our fourth academy at the high school. What we're going to do tonight is give you an overview of the program itself, the academy, the courses that we're hoping to initiate into the academy, our time frames, and then what our students can do once they graduate from the academy, or if they choose to just take a course within the academy. We'll also talk to you about the connections we're going to have to a local university and with some of our local law enforcement. Tim Clayton is going to present this to you. He's been instrumental in helping us structure this and organize this. And his expertise has been invaluable in helping us get this hopefully off the ground next September. That's our goal. A course in the fall, a course in the spring, and then building each year.
Okay. Thank you. Hello. I actually wrote a script, but I think I'm going to go off my script a little bit and just talk to you about the brochure and talk to you about the academy. Okay. This came about a year and a half ago. Dr. Cajun came up to me and we started to discuss about the Academy of Public Safety or Academy of Public Service. It was right up my alley. As a police administrator and a trainer in policing, and I have a daughter that's now pursuing to become a police officer, I said to him, hey, let's put something together that I would want for my child. Let's put something together that when I build relationships in the hallways with students and they come down and talk to me about being police officers, where do I go to school? How do I become a police officer? What route do I take? I literally mapped this out for them. And it happens all the time. It happened 2 days ago, or yesterday, really today's Tuesday, it happened Monday. I had a student come down, I spent about 40 minutes with him, and I mapped it out for him. It's something I think we can do with this. Basically, what we decided to do was, we decided to put together courses that are taught to police officers. We're following the Police Training Commission, the New Jersey State Police Training Commission, and on how they teach police officers. So instead of just going in and sitting down and teaching the history of policing and the 1890 Watchmen and those type of things, we're actually going to get in and talk about morals and ethics. Ethics in policing, morals in policing, and that goes over to everyday aspects for some of these students. We're going to talk about communication, verbal communication, nonverbal communication, things they can do on an outside of just police work. It's just an everyday character building type thing. And then it gets into the policing as well. We talk about policy and procedures, rules and regulations. These are all the basic part of the first class. And structures of police departments. And I know we're talking about police departments, and when you start talking about organizational chain of command or the organizational chart and the flow charts, it goes into every aspect. So although we are kind of gearing towards the public safety officer, they're used throughout all different parts of business and all different parts of government. The second part of it is just to build onto the more specific, the persons who now are becoming more interested in policing and the public safety too. We would get into more hands-on, practical, functional police work, motor vehicle enforcement, car stops. And when I mean car stops, I mean we literally go to the Seagard Army camp, we put them in a patrol car with a police officer, and we do mock car stops. And we teach them how you stop a car, those type of things. We talk about fire service, we bring the fire trucks in, we show them how the fire trucks operate, we get our partners in first aid, we talk about first responders to a motor vehicle crash. We talk and we do these things. We go out and we diagram. We reconstruct motor vehicle crashes. These are the kind of things we start putting in place. So it's really that functional approach to education in public safety. Going further than that, your next level would be the criminal investigation. Everybody wants to be a crime scene investigator because they saw it on TV. But we really start getting into it. We start talking about fiber identification, how you collect evidence, identifying fingerprints, lifting fingerprints. Because in some police agencies, not only are you the first responder, but you're also the detective. It's your case. you have to lift the fingerprint. You got to submit that to the crime lab. It can be identified. You can go through, it's the APHIS fingerprint identification system. And we have these connections, and you see that I have the Monmouth County Sheriff's badge on the front. The Monmouth County Sheriff, when Dr. Cage and I sat down with him, and I explained this to him, it's somebody I have a personal relationship with, and he thought it was terrific. He originally didn't really want to be part of it because he said, oh, we have one in Neptune, we have a vocational one in Long Branch, completely different. When we started talking to him about what we wanted to do, he was on board. He's like, yes, absolutely, use my badge. You have my resources. When we talk about communication, we're going to bring their communication trailer here. They're going to see actual live communications of 911 calls and how this whole system operates. That's the first three classes. The next one, we wanted to add the college component. So we reached out to do a course ahead partnership with Georgia Court University. And you know, they gave us the, yes, we're interested in becoming partners with you in this, where we start giving college-level courses, theories of crime, criminal law practice. These are their classes that would be taught by an adjunct professor with a college credit in. What we're basically doing is we're training these people to become police officers. Then we're giving them the college credits to give them a jump start ahead of everybody else, putting them on the path to become public FBI, DEA, federal, state police, because they all require degrees. Or generally, most of them require degrees. Or if they want to go to the military, it works in military policing. It just creates these things. And the students I talk to in the halls, and it's starting to get out now. We did this presentation to the eighth grades, Ascending District, the eighth graders. And I've had students come up to me now and say, hey, are we really doing this? And I think, yeah, we're really doing this because it's something I'm really passionate about. It's something I really think that you have a need here at Manasquan for. And I think it's something that's really going to take off. The last part is you see the Class 1 certification. What that is one of the things I look for when we were hiring police officers in Wall Township was we wanted to see what separated that candidate from everybody else. Everybody had bachelor's degrees. Everybody had degrees in criminal justice. But what separates you? Well, experience separates you. Training and experience separates you from everybody else. And what we would offer here after one of our students graduated the academy is we would offer that experience. We would go with our sending district police chiefs, get them on board, and we would create a pool of employees for them, because they're always looking for Class 1 specials. And then with our relationship with Monmouth County Sheriff, who oversees the police academy, we would be able to run an 80-hour Class 1 certification course right here at Manasquan, and we would certify our graduates of our police academy and put them out into they'd have to graduate high school, obviously, and it'd be a resolution for them hired. But we would be able to train them here and give them a real solid pool of candidates. That separates our students from everyone else that want to get into public safety. And we're not just identifying students that are career oriented, I just want to be a cop. I'm talking about identifying like kids that are kind of high risk kids that like really need a good solid discipline course, a foundation, an understanding, and just teach these things to those guys too, you know, the boys or girls. And I'm really excited about it. I think it's something that would be terrific here. I think it's something that's going to be very successful. And I think when it becomes successful, you're going to have more and more people wanting to get on board law enforcement. I've been talking to the state police. I don't have the triangle on here, but I think we're going to lock down the state police and we'll be able to use their resources right here at Seagirt. That's basically my talk about the Public Safety Academy.
But you could also see the career pathways there.
Oh.
And those are also things that students have interest in as we broaden our scope. So it's just not for police officers per se, but fire investigation, state troopers, emergency medical technicians, which I think would be, and we're trying to get Meridian also involved with this. So it's got a lot of upsides.
And it has, and I think it's going to be well attended.
Any questions?
Yes.
What grade level?
It would start at 10th grade just because the freshmen have so much going on.
Okay.
And it would be grade specific. It's like we wouldn't do too much. Some of the law enforcement class curriculum is a little, you know, more advanced, and we would leave that part out. I went through the Police Training Commission, all their training courses, and I picked what I felt was grade specific and basic level for the 10th grade. And it gets more advanced as they get older.
In order to get accreditation, we had to present curriculums to George and Court University, as well as what books we'll be utilizing, so they can improve those college credits. So we're in the process of doing that as well. Barbara, anything?
No, I think we've really covered it. It does allow students to go many, many different ways, you know, especially with George and Court involved. So we're really catering to a broad spectrum of students, which I think our other academies have done also. And I think that's, you know, the appeal of this, that we're not targeting our high achievers or our middle kids. It's across the board. There's something here for everyone. And if they choose not to be, you know, a police officer or go this way, but they're interested in criminal justice, that's a whole other avenue for them. And I think that that is really exciting about what we're trying to do here. But to piggyback on the question about when we start, we had to be careful because to go for the class one, it has, the timing has to be right, because everything has to happen within a finite amount of time. So Tim was able to structure this so that our seniors could be eligible.
Mattisquan High School is a comprehensive high school. We're always talking about our gifted and talented. We're always talking about our AP classes. This is a focus on the whole student body. Any child can get actively engaged in this and be successful, and it's attractive to a lot. So it helps us maintain that focus on a comprehensive high school, where our high school dedicated to all students, not the upper end, lower end, middle, all students. And this is a focus in an academy for anyone. So, well done.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brings us to number nine, discussion items for the November 15th Committee of the Whole agenda. For education, curriculum, and technology. We'll turn it over to Dr. Cage.
On tonight's agenda, there is a, I think it's number 42, to approve the proposed Academy of Public Safety to start in September. Once that is done, it gives us the opportunity to reach out for trustees for the Academy and to move forward with the agreements with Georgia Court University. As we just presented that, are there any questions about that at all? Also, you received a sketch of the proposed high school media center renovations. And with that, also, there are two policies that we have. Gifts, grants, and donations that you received, that's virtual handout, 7230, and school and faculty names. As we move forward, as we watched all the donations come in for the press box that we now is close to completion, the endowment is also focused on upgrading, in regards to technology, the media center in which we're in right now. And they've presented me with a design layout in regards to some things that they would like to do, which came from the building principal and the media specialists that we have. I currently have our director of technology looking at this to see exactly if everything's where it should be and if this is something that is going to move us towards the future for technology. And as you can see from the schematic that you received, there's a section where these books are right now that is a glass classroom. Now, the state has not seen this yet. I don't know if they allow for glass classrooms to be placed in schools, but that's something that came back to us from Demco Interiors. I had not been involved in this drawing. I'm involved with the end results, looking at it, and I had a discussion with the endowment about this. I understand exactly what the principal and the media specialists are focusing on. I compliment them for it. I think it's going to make give us the opportunity to again focus on those 21st century learning skills. And Jesse's in the process of looking at it now. So, having said that, seeing the donations that came in, knowing that there might be sizable donations for us for this media center, I also gave you the gifts, grants, and donations, and also the naming policies. So that can be reflected in tonight's minutes that we read those. They haven't been updated since 2011. I don't think they need to be revised, but I'd like notice that they were looked at in 2016 as we're moving forward with the endowment becoming more active and engaged with giving donations to the high school. Any questions about that at all? Thank you. As we move to policy and agenda items, 2017 board meeting schedule has been provided for you. Any questions about that? Lynn, would you like to focus on that for a second?
Certainly. The draft schedule.
Time's up. I'm kidding.
A second?
Yes.
The draft schedule for 2017 was included in the Friday packet. It's also document H this evening. For the most part, it's very similar to the schedule that we had for 2016 with a number of combined COW and regular meetings. And then part of the year, we have separate COW meetings and regular meetings. They're separated. There's two per month. So did everyone have a chance to look at that?
The only one that's not a Tuesday is the reorg meeting?
That is correct. We have the first week of January is designated for the reorganization meeting, and the only way you can deviate from the first week of January is if we were to not have a quorum in that week. We are closed on Monday of that week due to the holiday, and coming back on Tuesday, we just feel like we would like to have a fully complete agenda, and we would like to have that day of Tuesday in the office and have the meeting on Wednesday if all board members feel that they can make a Wednesday meeting. And that would be just the reorganization that evening. That would not be any regular business or COW items. The regular meeting combined with a COW meeting would be January 24th, which is a Tuesday.
If you'd like Tuesday, we can move it to a Tuesday. It just gave us a better chance to be prepared coming back from the break.
It's fine. I just noticed that it was.
Yes, thank you for asking that.
Put it in my phone. Okay. For the reminder.
Thank you, Lynn.
You're welcome.
Also on the policy agenda items, in the Friday packet was a manager of education facilities. As you know, we've posted for that, and as of we speak, we do have six resumes that the human resource officer is going through. But it was different than the manager of education facilities that we had before, and that's one of the reasons we sent it out in the Friday packet. I believe it's also item 41 on tonight's agenda. And being in that item 41, I just wanted to know if anybody had any questions about this at all, or if you'd like me to highlight any ways where it was different. Okay. Moving right along, we have finance agenda items. We had an ad hoc finance committee. I was moving stage left. In fact, I'm going to get a piece of cake.
Had an ad hoc finance committee last year to aid and go through the budget. And we've listed the people on the agenda this evening that were on that committee. And if there aren't any objections, we'll just stay with the committee that we had last year. If by chance somebody on the committee doesn't feel like they can serve, just send me an email or Lynn, and we will ask for volunteers. But as of today, we're just going to go with the same committee that we had last year. Any questions? Now I'd like to respectfully turn it over to Lynn so that she can go through the budget process.
Thank you. Just a quick update on the 17-18 budget process. We are on schedule right now with our budget plan of action. The budget rollout meeting was held with the administration on Friday, November 4th. Their budgets that they will develop will be submitted to Dr. Kazian and myself by December 23rd. In the month of December, we will communicate with our sending districts, asking them to get back to us regarding their estimated student counts for the 17-18 school year. and our Board Finance Committee, as Tom just mentioned, we'll start those meetings late January, early February. So we'll be calling meetings of the Finance Committee to review budget items. An update on our 15-16 school district audit. The draft audit has been received and is under review. Once we receive the final copy from the auditor, we'll send it out to all board members electronically. That could be as early as this Friday. The audit will be submitted to the state by the statutory deadline of December 5th, and we've invited the auditor to present at our December 20th meeting, where we will accept the audit at that meeting. And regarding banking requests for proposals, in preparation of our January reorganization meeting, the district is due to release a banking services request for proposal. So this evening on the agenda, document letter L reflects the motion to solicit such proposals. And we did provide information to the board in October and November regarding the RFP process. Are there any questions on any of those three finance items?
I have one question.
Yes.
On the first pass at the budget for the administrators, are you requesting them to come in with the same budget as they did last year? Are we giving them, let's say, 2% and an increase in the budget and have them work with that? So I'm just looking to see how we're asking them to work, or is it just a kind of a, I'd like to have this?
No, that's a great question, because Lynn and I had spoke about that in detail, and I'm gonna let Lynn, if you would.
Thank you. There is a budget allocation number that is given to each department. And this particular year, that allocation number is flat to the current year. There's also three sheets that each administrator is given. One is for proposed new staff hiring, one is for new programs and new initiatives, and the third one is for any projects that they feel need to be done within their department. So they can submit these sheets, or they don't have to if they feel they don't need any of those things, but they can submit these sheets in addition to the budget that they put together coming in at their allocation number. So those three sheets are above and beyond their allocation number. And all of these, all of this information is then reviewed by Dr. Kajian and myself. And regarding the new staff sheet, we are bringing in Mrs. Kerensky as Director of Curriculum and also Mr. Place as HR this year to review the new staff requests. All of the budget submittals will be reviewed, and we will sit with each administrator that turns a budget in the month of January. And informally, the administrator presents their budget in a conversation basis, not a formal presentation, but to Dr. Kajian and I. And we have, back and forth questions, responses from them while we're considering their budget requests. So that will all happen in the month of January. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Any other questions on finance? Under building and grounds, just on the agenda this evening, document I is our comprehensive maintenance plan, our M1 form, and our facilities checklist. These are required state submittals each year, and they really are coupled with our CUSAC and our statement of assurance documents. So these will be turned in, and they're required to be completed by each district in the fall. I have one additional item that's not on the agenda. I received an email late this afternoon, and it's very appropriate to this evening because it's tonight you saw on the agenda that we are approving our Power Save stipend amounts, which are funded by New Jersey Natural Gas. Our district was asked to participate a second year in the Power Save program. So each school will have their Power Save team intact for the second year. So this email came from the Power Save advisor, and it's in regard to a program that New Jersey Natural Gas is running, and it involves Facebook. So we heard our technology presentation this evening, and what it is if you go on Facebook and you like New Jersey Natural Gas, and on their page, if you look for the energy saving hog that's going to be dressed up in holiday decor, and you like those photos, for each like, New Jersey Natural Gas will donate $1 toward the Ocean and Monmouth County Food Bank. So I'm going to include this information in the Friday packet, and please share it with your family and friends, your children, whoever's on Facebook, because we can all contribute to those monies that can, then get sent to our food bank. So that's my final item.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Item 10, regarding the approval of the following Future Ready Schools District Pledge. As part of our Future Ready School grant, I'm asking the board to approve tonight a pledge that I'm making focused on digital learning in the 21st century. I, Dr. Frank Cation, Superintendent of Madisonville School District, do hereby affirm the commitment of this district to work with students, educators, families, and members of our community to become future ready by engaging in a wide range of activities, such as fostering and leading a cultural of digital learning within our schools, helping schools and families transition to high-speed connectivity, empowering educators through professional learning opportunities, accelerating progress towards universal access for all students to quality devices, providing access to quality digital content, offering digital tools to help students and families reach higher, and mentoring other districts and helping them transition to digital learning. Any questions about that? And Jesse, I'd like to have that put on the front page of our website as well, along with that video that you showed this evening. I think it says a lot about us. Thank you. With that, enrollment, total Manasquan High School students, 946. Total Manasquan Elementary School, 632. A total of 1,578. As we move the binder around. Our high school percentage for October 2016, attendance percentage 94.9, average daily enrollment 929, average daily attendance 883. At the elementary school, the attendance percentage 97.4, the average daily enrollment 630, average daily attendance 614. The fire drill report at the high school on October 5th at 8:30, we had a fire drill which lasted 7 minutes. On October 18th at 9:30, we had an evacuation to an alternate location which took 25 minutes. At the elementary school, we had an interior threat lockdown on October 11th at 11 a.m., which took 5 minutes. On October 24th, we had an evacuation to the high school, which took 15 minutes at 10:30 a.m. There's also going to be, the chief of police came today and requested the utilization of our building during January for one day, actually one night from 4 to 12, where they're going to have an active shooter drill for the Manasquan police and all the surrounding schools. So we reached out. There's wrestling and basketball practice that night. We're asking them to go to an alternate location. And I think it's very important that they do that drill on site so they get acquainted with our building in case anything ever were to happen. So I think it's a nice relationship we have with the Manasquan police as we speak. The chief, I think, is doing an excellent job. Not that the last chief didn't, I think they both did, but it's nice to see us gravitating closer together. Having said that, the one thing I do want to say before we go on, and I'm not being political at all, but I just recently read a letter that a superintendent in Monmouth County sent out to her community focused on the election results and fear of students with those results. The reason I didn't do anything like that is because of the way our staff handled this year and the election process. I think we have an excellent staff that focuses on what's happening in America in a very educational way. So I don't feel there's any need. I don't feel any fear here. And I feel some surprise. And I do feel that there were two sides to that election process, but we're focusing on it in a way where students are learning about it as it happens. So I think it's excellent. So having said that, there'll be no letter coming from my chair focused on the election or the results or any fear that students have, because I do not feel that that exists here at Manasquan. Our staff's doing an excellent job. And that concludes my superintendent's report. Yeah, let's have one. The Manasquan School District Harassment, Intimidation, and Bullying Report, as of November 15th, 2016. On 10/17, we had a confirmed HIV, and there was counseling with the school counselor at the elementary school. We also had an investigation of a HIB on that same day at the elementary school, which turned out not to be a harassment, intimidation, bullying situation, but a code of conduct. And there was counseling with the school counselor as well. At the high school, on September 30th, we had an investigation of a possible harassment, intimidation, and bullying, which ended up being a code of conduct violation, which there was counseling with the school counselor as well, where there were four students involved. And on the 7th of October, there was also an investigation of a possible harassment, intimidation, and bullying situation, which was found out to be a code of conduct, not a HIB, and it was also counseling with the school counselor, and there were two children or students involved in that. Thank you for reminding me of that.
You're welcome.
And now that concludes my report. Yes.
Can I ask something about the HIB? Do we have stuff in place so that a child who basically accuses of HIB following it, especially if it's confirmed, like if you look, two of the students in case 3 and 4 are accused by two different ID victim, we're just going to use the words that are on this chart. They were confirmed in one to be a HIB, another one not. But for those students who accuse, do we have things in place for, whether it's in the elementary school or the high school, where almost circling the wagons around them so that they're protected going forward, like at the locker or in the bathrooms or in the hall, in the hallways?
Teachers are notified about this, as well as the counselor who deals with this at the elementary school. And we talk about this. And if they feel there's a definite threat, it would be considered harassment, intimidation, and bullying. Both of these situations, I had long discussions with the elementary school. And it took me a while to understand why one was not a harassment, intimidation, bullying, but they couldn't devise any evidence to show that it was. So I think there are safeguards in both schools which protect the students who are both involved in it and those that are onlookers as well. But I will talk to both counselors tomorrow just to ensure that that's happening. But we do have long discussions when they come to my office, and now the human resource officer is involved as well. And if there's other ways that it's, if you think it's not,
no,
let me
I'm
know.
No, no, I'm just, I just, knowing the way, out in the hallway, I don't know the setup. I don't know what happens in the hallways. I don't know if teachers are outside their door, if they're in their classroom, or if, I speak to my children when I hear something of going on with bullying to say, if you see something happen, you stick up for that child.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, I don't know if it is set up there in the hallways, that there are a lot of eyes, especially once you know that there's a situation.
I'm in both buildings. Maybe they're there because I'm there, but mm-hmm. when I walk down the hallway in the high school, I purposely went 2 days, different periods, and I saw the high school teachers outside their door during passing time. Then when I went to the elementary school, I was in the junior high wing. The teachers were outside and in the fifth grade section. So they are outside, they're very vigilant, and it's a great environment in both buildings. It really is. Yeah. Teachers take it seriously, and they do a wonderful job.
And maybe not only the teachers that the students have, but maybe the teachers when there is a case,
mm-hmm.
the teachers whose rooms surround maybe the lockers and things like that, or the bathrooms, or the gym teachers that get notified, things like that, just places that
one
there
of
could be retaliation.
That came out of the instructional council that I had yesterday, was that at the elementary school, they have professional learning communities where the grade levels actually stand and talk about children. That's huge. And they talk about problems that children have and how they can each help each other. That's not happening in a high school because of the way the schedule's set up and because the environment's different. And we're working on seeing if we could possibly put something in place where that can occur. And that's very impactful when you can do that. So, okay, thank you.
Do we have a motion to accept the superintendent's report? Mrs. Muehle, second. Mr. Warren, any questions on the superintendent's report? Sandy?
Mrs. Bissell?
Yes.
Mr. Burns?
Yes.
Mr. Catani?
Yes.
Mrs. DePalma?
Yes.
Mr. Fiore?
Yes.
Mrs. Garrett Muehle?
Yes.
Mr. Lopretto?
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino?
Yes.
Mr. Serino?
Yes.
Mr. Vitale?
Yes.
Mr. Warren?
Yes.
Carrie?
We are to our first public forum on agenda items. I don't see anyone from the public here, so I'm going to refrain from that paragraph.
She offended her.
Your family, you're not, your family. That brings us to the Manasquan General items, numbers 12 through, scroll, through 30. Does anyone need anything separated out, 12 through 30? Take your time.
Just for discussion.
We're not there yet, but.
No, just number 30.
Oh, no, yeah, we're not there yet, but yeah, you don't need to separate, right?
No.
Okay. We're good? Do we have a motion for 12 through 30? Ms. Pisone, do we have a second?
Second.
Ms. Muley, any discussion on items 12 through 30?
30.
Yes.
Looking at, Lynn, looking at the transportation, I know there's always a variation, but some seem really extreme compared to, like, why is it costing us almost $18,000 to bus to Allenwood School? I don't know how far Oakwood School is.
Yeah, on some of these routes, I need to keep everyone in mind that they could be shared with other districts.
Okay.
So if they're shared with other districts, the cost that you see is our seat on that route.
So like the Alpha
School. So I don't have the detail with me to answer that specific question.
Alpha School, we have two students going there with an aide. Each getting charged $16,100,
That's their share of the route. $16,100 per.
Per child, so $32,000, almost $33,000.
Yes.
45,000 of Shrewsbury. Now is it because when we look at an Oakwood, I have no idea where Oakwood is. Do we have that many students? Is there that many students on the bus going?
I didn't bring the file, so
yeah.
I can't answer that question.
Can we get that, or maybe even for the special ed committee? Or
certainly.
Thank you.
No problem.
Any other questions? Sandy.
Mrs. Pisone.
Yes.
Mr. Burns.
Yes.
Mr. Patani.
Yes.
Mrs. De Palma.
Yes.
Mrs. Garrett Muley.
Yes.
Mr. Libretto.
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Yes.
Mr. Serino.
Yes.
Mr. Warren.
Yes.
Carried.
Manasquan Senate District items 31 through 47. Would anybody need anything separated out in those items? 31 to 47.
Said to 47?
Tom? Yes, please. Okay, do we have a motion for 31 to 47? Mr. Catani, second. Ms. Pisone, do we have any questions? I have a question. Document 2, Lynn, for the payment application?
Yes.
Question is, looking at the document, the amount that we hold at the end to the last
retained.
You're retained. Thank you for that. Is that standard 5% or is it normally 10%? Mr. Kovacs, would you like to answer?
It's a sliding percentage depending on the value of the contract and the money remaining. Generally, it is 5%. If you get to a certain value in the contract, and then it can be reduced.
Reduced?
No. When you get down to $1,000 left on the job, you're generally not, you have a sliding scale that you can employ if you want to, and it's recommended by the architect. If it's not recommended, you can continue with 5%.
So we don't determine that, the architect determines it?
No, it's determined by statute as to the retainage, and it's 5% of the completed work, and then there's in the statute, it gives you a sliding scale to change that percentage when you get down to the bottom of it, because you've got all the other monies. That money's staying there till you get to the end. And what you'll have is certain applications as you get to the end of the job to pay certain vendors so they're not filing lien claims. That's generally why it's done.
All right, I was thinking of it the other way. And the idea is to hold the money to make sure that the job is performed.
You are, but you're holding a
5% on each one. But in the past, we've had things finished up that weren't done properly, and we didn't have anything to hold over the contractor's head. So now we're going out to referendum to fix the things that weren't done the first time.
You should have always had the
retainage. But
if it was higher,
but it didn't cover.
If it was 10%,
a 14.50 retainage on a $373,000 job isn't much,
yeah.
Is what you're saying, right?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
$1,400 at the end of a job that would cost almost $500,000 is not.
The 1450 is on 29,000.
Right, just
right.
On that.
So
yeah.
If the
just
next pay application is 29,000, we'll hold another 1450.
Right.
But they're not going to walk away from 10%. They might walk away from 5%, is what I'm saying. I would thought the number would have been higher. That's all.
It's you. I mean, I'm familiar with it, and 10% is usually standard. On any document I've ever seen,
under Title 18, under Title 18A, if you're doing the, we can get you the statute. Under 18A, it's specifically set forth as to what the formula is.
Mm-hmm. And that's determined by
statute.
I mean, that can be changed. If we say, well, we want 10%, then we can say we want 10%.
The statute is setting the value. As to the sliding scale, you have some more to say. But until you get to that dollar value,
right.
It's 5%.
Do we have, is there any, do we, can we see that scale? Lynn, do you have that? Like after, you could show it.
I can
make
a copy.
Doesn't have to be now.
I can take a copy of the statute tomorrow. That can just
perfect.
Go out.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why we send it out on Friday back.
That's good. Thank you.
Perfect.
And just if I may, a little bit about the process with the pay applications. I know this is pay application number one. This is actually one revised. The original number one, when I reviewed it, I asked for the administration portion of the pay application. The contractor was asking for 50%. Contractor was asking for 75% based on where we are in the administration, not the job itself, but the administration portion. I was more comfortable with 50%. They readily revised it, so this actually is a lower amount than the draft application I put in the last Friday packet by a couple thousand dollars. But the process is, once it goes from the contractor to the architect is signing off that yes, they feel that this work has been completed. They sign off, they send it to me. Each pay application will be reviewed by Mr. Gross's office, and I believe it will be Mr. Kovacs, correct, when they're sent in?
If I'm there, unless you've heard otherwise.
So each application will be reviewed by our board attorney before it's placed on the agenda. And payment is made.
If I can, I just want to make clear, that 5% that's being taken now, that goes into the bank. That's not going away. So for until you get to a certain value on that job, that whatever, what's your retainage now? You will see a value, and you can go through your, if you get there, do they get these and the attachments? Does the board get the attachments for the prereqs? Yeah. You're going to see a sliding scale as to how much money is being held. So right now on the retainage, you've got $1,450. That goes into the bank, so to speak. Your next requisition, depending on how much work they get done, 5% of that goes into that bank plus, so it's going to be X plus the 1450.
Gotcha.
Next pay requisition all the way down. You're going to see different, just, do you have this time? If you don't have this time, I won't take it.
Oh, we have all night.
Oh, okay, no. As you're going to see certain things in the work completed columns, certain things are going to be done up front, and those values are going to be gone. For instance, if you take a look at shop submittals number 5, your shop submittals and your drawings, that's usually something that's submitted to the architect before anything is placed. The architect has to say, okay, this conforms to my specs, these drawings conform, these are the means and methods I'm going to approve, they're consistent with what I've told you to do in the specifications. You're probably going to see that value down pretty quick, because at a point in time when everything's ordered, the architect has approved it, that dollar value is now gone. Just like when you have your architect's contracts, when he talks about the bidding phase, that goes pretty quick as opposed to then the construction management phase. So you're going to be able to see where you're tracking. and this is some, going back to your point, long explanation to get to your point. Mm-hmm. As you're going to be able to see, as you get down, you're going to see what the values of the percentage, balance to finish and retainage variable. That's what that variable line is. You're going to be able to see as you get down, and you're going to want to know, are there lien claims coming in? Do we have these values? And you don't have to wait till the end of the job to address those.
Bless you.
Got it. Anything else?
I have just one other question. The payment of performance bond and the insurance that they're billing for this,
right,
this period, was that an extra insurance that we required, or was that his?
The payment and performance bond is something that is that we require in the contract, and it is required by statute.
So it's an extra.
It's payment. An extra.
All right. Good.
Yes.
Okay. And the insurance was.
The
also
insurance
an extra
is
policy?
Also an extra because now we require them to have,
okay,
policies of insurance naming us as a named insured,
okay,
for materials specific to us,
mm-hmm,
for our jobs in case somebody.
Right.
Again, sort of teachable moment. The idea of insurance and performance guarantees in the course of construction is really to keep the job moving forward. That's the end goal with those. Goods get put on site, they're stored, they're properly stored, but something happens, you get a Sandy, something gets destroyed, those goods aren't there now.
Mm-hmm.
We've required him to have a policy,
right,
of insurance to replace that so that we're not muddled into court as to who was at fault,
right,
for storage, how it was stored, and those things. There's a dollar value. The insurance companies come in with a subrogation to move your job forward. Same thing with performance guarantees and performance bonds. You have certain bonds with regard to signing the contract. If they sign the contract, the bid bond, poof, it's gone. You,
right,
already know this.
I know that.
As to the performance guarantees, as they move along, if you get lien claims and they're not,
right,
responding to those lien claims, you contact the bonding company and say, we need to have this addressed relatively,
mm-hmm,
quickly. Otherwise, you know, we have the ability to take a portion of that money,
right,
pay that contract.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to, I wasn't sure if that was an
those
answer.
Are, those are what we required in addition on above and beyond what they might normally keep for, say, their business. They have their own insurance for,
right,
their business, but,
right,
this is,
yeah,
for our
this
job.
Is okay.
Thank you, Mr.
Cole. Yeah, well done.
Any other questions?
I have a question.
Yes, Mr. Warren.
On 44 for the professional days, I noticed for Mr. Reed's hotel, this happened to be kind of a high number for the amount of days that were there, and I just wasn't sure how that was calculated. If it's four nights, it's $500 a night for his hotel room. So I don't know how
the Synergistic National Training Conference?
No,
yes.
Best of the one.
No.
Best
no.
Ball tournament.
No. First,
you can blame not me, not for the cause, but we're sending a team to one of the things I did when I first came here. We had a trip, van trip. I required an administrator to go on the trip.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime we're sending somebody out of the state, I require them to be there. We have the surf team that goes to San Diego every,
mm-hmm,
year. I make sure I meet with the coach and talk to him. We have not had an administrator go on that trip. Next year, if they go again, there will be an administrator going on that trip. I met with him and his parents, and they were very confident that everything would be okay. Everything is okay, but I'd like to take the owner's responsibility off the shoulders of the coach and put that on the administrator who's there. So same thing with this. When we had our new supervisor of athletics, I spoke to him and the building principal, and I said, I don't care who goes, but someone's going. And so that's why the person Rich Reed's going to Florida.
I think that was the question.
The question was, why is it 500 a night?
Oh, it's in Disney World. It's in the Magic,
okay,
Kingdom. So,
that was the,
yeah, it's expensive.
So it's all that package.
And that's where the kids are staying. That's where the kids are staying.
The idea is for him to be near the team. That's where the team was staying at their own cost.
And that's always for me.
But now we're sending.
I apologize for being my
6 to 30
when I just could have cut to the chase.
Yes.
Five nights? Second question, this looks back to the budget question I had earlier.
Do we have a general budget for professional days, travel, and other things?
We have a line item for that? Lynn, I think we do.
In general?
Yeah. In general, yes. Yeah. And there would be one, I don't want to say every single departmental budget, but the majority of the departmental budgets would have a line item for workshops and travel and mileage.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Any other questions? Sandy.
Mrs. Passell.
Yes.
Mr. Burns.
Yes.
Mr. Patani.
Yes.
Mrs. De Palma.
Yes.
Mr. Fiore.
Yes.
Mrs. Garrett Muley.
Abstain from Richard Reed, number 44. Yes to everything else.
Mr. Lafretta.
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Yes.
Mr. Serino.
Yes.
Mr. Vitale.
Yes.
Mr. Warren.
Yes.
Carried.
That brings us to old business and new business. Anyone have any old business they would like to discuss? Or any new business that they would like to discuss? Mrs. Mueller.
Yeah, with the one devices, I had some people ask if, well, not necessarily ask, but just kind of voicing their concerns that they paid for the insurance,
mm-hmm.
and then there was a glitch in the software or whatever, and their device was not usable and was being fixed. But during that time while it was being fixed, their child was without a device. Do we have any plans for like having a pool of replacement devices? Or
maybe Mr. Place can answer that. He's here.
Because they did say that they felt like their child kind of not fell behind, but definitely wasn't as engaged as the rest, and it wasn't anything that they destroyed. So they're kind of like, well, they don't get a loaner.
Well, in fact, they do most of the time. I think that basically what we have in place is when a student, if it's a repair that's going to happen, can't be made within the same day or like by the next day. We usually do provide them with a replacement device until that device can be available. Depends on which grade level they're in as far as what that device is, because we have different devices here in the high school and the elementary school. So with that, it depends. This year we've had a few issues with parts availability from the manufacturer, and I know that delayed a couple things with that, but I think as of today, everyone has a replacement device. We're kind of monitoring it daily. There were a couple individual instances where a student was without one for a couple days, and we did try to rectify that as best. But in general, yes, we replace it with something so they have it.
Any other old or new business? That brings us to our second public forum. Would anyone from the public like to be heard? Seeing someone, but someone that would not like to be heard, moves us to executive session. Whereas the Senator Byron M. Baer Open Public Meetings Act, NJSA 10:4-6, the Act provides the Massachusetts Board of Education can hold an executive session from which the public is excluded to discuss matters that are confidential or one of the 9 subject matters listed in Section 12B of the Act. And whereas it is recommended by the superintendent that the Massachusetts Board of Education go into executive session on this date in Massachusetts, New Jersey, to discuss matters are permissible for discussion in executive session. And whereas the length of the executive session is estimated to be 45 minutes, which it will be shorter than 45 minutes, after which the public meeting of the board shall reconvene and proceed with business. And whereas the board hereby declares its discussion of the following subjects will be made public at a time when the public's interest in disclosure is greater than any privacy or governmental interest being protected from disclosure. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Massachusetts Board of Education, the board shall go into executive session to discuss the following items. Number 4, collective bargaining, an MEA sidebar agreement. And number 8, personnel matters involving hiring, resignations, and leaves of absence. Items discussed in executive session will result in board action when the board reconvenes to public session. Do I have a motion to go into executive session? Mr. Lafredo, second. Ms. Passone, all those in favor?
Aye.
Red folder.
I'm good.
Do we have a motion to reconvene? Mr. Lafredo. Second by Mr. Burns. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Item 51. Recommend approval of the elementary school personnel as per document N. Do we have a motion? Mrs. Muley. Seconded by Mr. Palmer. Any questions on document N? Sandy.
Yes. Mr. Burns.
Yes.
Mr. Catani.
Yes.
Mrs. De Palma.
Yes.
Mrs. Garrett Muley.
Yes.
Mr. Lafretta.
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Yes.
Mr. Serino.
Yes.
Mr. Warren.
Yes.
Carried.
Massachusetts Sandy District's personnel. Recommend approval of the high school personnel as per document 5. That's item 52. Do we have a motion for item 52? Mr. Vitale. Second. Mr. Burns. Any questions on document 5? Sandy.
Mrs. Bassone.
Yes.
Mr. Burns.
Yes.
Mr. Catani.
Yes.
Mrs. DePalma.
Yes.
Mr. Fury.
Yes.
Mrs. Garrett Muley.
Yes.
Mr. Lopretto.
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Yes.
Mr. Serino.
Yes.
Mr. Vitale.
Yes.
Mr. Warren.
Yes.
Carried.
Item 53, recommend approval of the sidebar agreement between the MEA and the Board of Education as per document 6. Mr. Serino, second. Mr. Catani, any questions on the sidebar agreement? Sandy.
Mrs. Bassone.
Yes.
Mr. Burns.
Yes.
Mr. Catani.
Yes.
Mrs. DePalma.
Yes.
Mr. Fury.
Yes.
Mrs. Garrett Muley.
Yes.
Mr. Lopretto.
Yes.
Mr. Pellegrino.
Yes.
Mr. Serino.
Yes.
Mr. Vitale.
Yes.
Mr. Warren.
Yes.
Carried.
Do we have a motion to adjourn? Mrs. DePalma. Second by Mrs. Muley. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And since it's a November meeting, Mrs. Muley's favorite month of the year, we will close with Go Squan, Beat Wall.
I think we might have hired two wall people tonight.
Notice the wall on that.
Notice the wall.